Fayetteville School District will soon have a new leader. The school board this week chose Dr. John Mulford to be its next superintendent, replacing John L. Colbert, a longtime educator who's retiring this summer. So, who is John Mulford, and how did the school board end up picking him for the job? We're going to find out on this week's edition of the Know the News podcast. Hi, everybody. I'm Dave Porozek, your host this week of Know the News, a production of the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette Newsroom. And I have a special guest I want to introduce, Nika Waitsman. She's president of the Fayetteville School Board. Nika, welcome, and thanks so much for sharing your time with us today.
Thanks, Dave. You bet.
And for those who aren't familiar, the Fayetteville School Board is a 7-person board, and like all school boards in Arkansas, all members are elected to their respective seats. They're not paid for their work, so they put in a lot of long hours sometimes with no compensation, other than, I suppose, the pure joy that school board membership brings, right, Nika?
That's correct, yeah. And we put in an extra dose of volunteer time over the last few months, for sure. But you're absolutely right. It is a labor of love. It is not paid work, but we enjoy it for sure.
And one of your most important duties as board is to hire and oversee the superintendent. Dr. Colbert announced about a year ago his intention to retire this summer. So, Nika, could you take us back to last year and sort of recap how you got the ball rolling on the search for a new superintendent?
Yes, absolutely. And I won't have an actual recollection of specific months where we made decisions, but in terms of the timeline, we made a decision as a board that we were going to require the services of a consulting firm. There are a number of firms that specialize in superintendent search processes for school boards, and so we considered some of those applicants first. We selected GR Recruiting to help us with that process, and after we made that selection, we did a whole series of community meetings, and we solicited feedback through surveys to try to create a profile of the candidate we were looking for. Then all of that feedback was submitted by GR Recruiting to the board, and we created a outline of that profile, which we then posted on our as a job opening in December of 2022. We posted the opening that and took applicants through mid-January, and so then we ended up getting over 35 applicants, I believe, and spent the next few months trying to narrow that down.
Yeah. And so you got it down to 6 candidates, 6 yep. finalists.
And yes, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, you interviewed all 6 by Zoom initially?
Yeah. So I guess in terms of the process of narrowing down, we started with a pool of 10 recommended candidates. As you know, one of the areas of expertise for this recruiting firm is they were able to take our profile and the feedback that they had gathered from the board and from the community, and they were able to identify the 10 applicants that they felt were best suited for this position. Of course, we could consider additional applicants, but we felt that the 10 that they put forward were indeed the best qualified. So we looked, they submitted packets of information, which included resumes, references, of course, and some additional background research that GR had done for us. We looked through those packets, and from that and they also submitted a video that was just, you know, they answered 3 different questions, I believe, by video. So the board in executive session considered all of those packet submissions, and we watched each one of those 10 videos. And from that, First process, we selected what we felt were the six most qualified, or the six best fits for our position, for our opening. And then the next step after that was to have an interview with them, where we would ask them questions. Each one lasted about an hour, but that was conducted by Zoom. And from that, we narrowed it down after that again. But we sort of kept all six of those in consideration, because we realized as a board that the in-person component of the interview is just critical, both for us and for the candidate.
You initially settled on two candidates to interview in person, following those virtual interviews. Anthony Rossetti, superintendent of the Webb City School District, and Brad Swofford of the Branson School District, both from Missouri. But the board ended up deciding to pass on both of them, which was a bit unusual, I think. Mm-hmm. Can you share whatever you can share in terms of what happened there? Was there, something the board saw or didn't see in those two gentlemen, both of whom, at least on paper, seem to have pretty strong credentials? What can you say about that?
I agree. I mean, I think that we just having them here in person, we took them on tours of our buildings, and then we spent, lengthy time in executive session with each of the candidates. We just felt that after spending time with these two individuals, and after they were able to, experience our school district, it just became clear that they probably, of the six, were not the two best fit for the district. And because we had four other candidates that were highly interested in the position, we just felt like it was, it would be a mistake for us to just try to, narrow it down so quickly. We just, I think through the in-person interviews, felt like it would be much more valuable to bring in two more candidates that were, we felt almost equally qualified, from just on paper. And then when we brought these additional two in, we felt like actually they were just both better fits than the previous two, for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. So, we decided to extend the process and realized we weren't in a big hurry. We didn't need to narrow it down so quickly.
Okay. So you turned your attention to, as you said, a couple others: John Mulford, Deputy Superintendent of Operations for the Springfield School District, and Janine Porter, Chief of Marketing, Communications, and Strategic Initiatives with the Irving, Texas School District. Can you tell us about how those interviews went? That was this week, right?
Yeah, that was, we had Dr. Mulford in town on Monday. We visited three of our school buildings and were able to meet some of our school principals and administrators and some kids, and tour the high school and all that, with both of those candidates. Dr. Porter came on Wednesday. And then we, in the evenings during executive session, we had interviews with each of those candidates. We just felt like Dr. Mulford, we were just thrilled to see the way he thinks, the experiences he brings from a much larger district, that has used a whole variety of alternative learning options for their students. He's just a visionary. What we were looking for as a board was not someone who had all the exact right answers to our questions, but rather someone who was clearly a leader, someone who could pull together strong teams of individuals and get the right people at the table to, and then support their initiatives as well. So he is just clearly gifted at that. He is an outstanding leader. And so I think that what we were looking for, we found in Dr. Mulford. While these other candidates are incredibly qualified and have had a wealth of experiences. We just felt he stood head and shoulders above the other applicants in terms of his leadership gifts.
Mm-hmm. I think with any superintendent search, there's always other people who might wonder, you know, why you didn't promote from within. And obviously, you know, that depends on whether you have interest from within. Did you have any internal candidates that you considered at all, or any that applied?
Well, we did not have any internal applicants or internal candidates apply for the position. We just felt, you know, going back to the beginning of the process, we felt we owed it to our community to do a thorough search to open up this opportunity to people from other regions. It's just a very important decision, and we didn't want to preclude any opportunities. So I think we just felt we could have just promoted someone internally and not gone through the application process, but we just didn't feel like that was what would serve our community the best. And so when we did open it up to application, you know, for whoever, we did not have any internal candidates apply.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what's next? You've got a contract to negotiate, right?
Yes, we're in the midst of that. Actually, we're wrapping that up. I think by this afternoon, we should have that all sorted out. And then we'll get that contract signed and moving forward. Dr. Mulford is just thrilled. He and his wife, Heather, have already spent some time in Fayetteville looking at neighborhoods, and they just couldn't be happier. And honestly, I think that's one of the things that appealed to us the most, is how much he loved this community. He just immediately understood the specialness of it and the unique opportunity that this role offered him as a leader in his career path. He's only 47 years old, so he's got quite a lot of time ahead. People had heard he was retiring from Springfield, and they have an arrangement in the state of Missouri where if you've worked in the system for a certain number of years, you can retire and take your retirement with you. And so it just makes sense for him to retire out of that system and consider other opportunities. So he isn't in any way considering the end of his career, but he is looking for a place where he can potentially finish out his career. So I think he felt that was a special opportunity here to do that in Fayetteville. They are just thrilled to be given this opportunity. We're working through the contract. They are planning to visit Fayetteville again next week, and we hope to be able to introduce him and Heather, his wife, at our board meeting on March 16th.
Okay. And he will plan on him starting the job July 1st. Is that right?
Yeah. So Dr. Colbert's contract ends on June 30th. And so Dr. Mulford will officially start as our superintendent on July 1st, but we already, you know, have added quite a few things to his calendar between now and July 1st, just in order to, you know, make a gradual transition. And we would like to include him on a lot of our, you know, conversations that are going on right now in the district, so that to get him up to speed before he officially starts on July 1st.
What do you see as Dr. Mulford's, you know, one or two top priorities in his first year on the job?
Well, he has been very clear. I mean, he's gave us his thoughts as to what he anticipates his first 100 days look like, which, again, were very well thought out and very reflective of a ton of research he had done on our district. He came in knowing a lot more than we expected him to know, but he just really did a deep dive into what some of our challenges are, what some of our strengths are. But I know for sure he will spend a big chunk of those first days just listening and learning, spending time with our leadership team, with our school principals, with our teachers and support staff, just trying to understand what they feel our strengths and our challenges are. And I think he will build his action steps on what he learns there. Of course, he's done some of that already with the board. And then I think he's going, obviously knows that the school district is in the midst of a rezone conversation. He wants to be a part of that conversation over the summer that we hope to have with community members, because we have committed to our community that we are going to move some lines by next fall. And so he wants to be a part of that conversation. He, you know, we, our strategic plan is also at a point where it needs to be revisited, because the timeline is such that we planned to adjust some of our goals and objectives. So he wants to be in part, he wants to lead that process, help us navigate that path forward. I think those are up there. That, oh, and then also we have quite a few changes happening with our executive cabinet. I think just getting that organizational chart sorted out and filling some critical positions with our leadership team, that's going to be a top priority as well.
All right. Well, always a lot going on there in the Fayetteville School District.
Definitely. I think he's prepared to hit the ground running for sure.
Good. Good. Well, Nika, thanks so much for coming on and sharing, getting us up to speed on everything with and explaining the process and what you guys went through in this search.
Absolutely.
Very informative. So I really appreciate your time.
Yes. Thank you, Dave. I appreciate your interest and just your good coverage of this process. And thank you for helping our community understand what an important decision this is. And just letting people know how thrilled we are with the next, with our path forward.
All right. Thanks so much, Nika.
Thanks, Dave. I appreciate it.
Talk
to you soon.
Mm-hmm. All right. Bye. Bye-bye. If you want to read more about the new Fayetteville superintendent, catch Al Gaspany's story in the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette's Friday paper or online at nwaonline.com. I want to tell you about some of the other fascinating stories we have coming your way this weekend. We've been writing about it for a while, and now it's finally about to open this weekend. I'm talking about Best Friends Animal Society Pet Resource Center in Bentonville. Billed as a first-of-its-kind, fully reimagined shelter, offering resources and services for both people and pets. Our Bentonville reporter, Mike Jones, will have the story on that. There's controversy over books in Arkansas, with a bill pending that would make public library staff criminally liable if books defined as obscene were available to minors at libraries. Such controversy is not limited to Arkansas, however. Doug Thompson will shed some light on the topic in a story he's working on for this weekend. And Fayetteville's Parks Department is flirting with the idea of converting some of the tennis courts at Wilson Park into pickleball courts. Stacy Ryburn will tell us about that. The Arkansas Opioid Recovery Partnership is distributing millions of dollars in settlement money statewide. Where is the money going in Northwest Arkansas and the River Valley, and for what exactly? Garrett Moore has a story for us on that. And in Fort Smith, the city is planning to name its fire station number one after Philip Christensen, the city's former fire chief who passed away last month. Monica Brick has that story. And, again about library books, Thomas Asente will have his story about the Crawford County Library Board getting ready to consider a motion that would allow it to approve or deny requests for books in the libraries it oversees. And don't forget our extensive entertainment coverage. In this Sunday's What's Up section, Monica Hooper tells us what shows will be part of the next season at Theater Squared. And a new season starts this weekend at Silver Dollar City in Branson, which will be the final season of the park's beloved Fire in the Hole thrill ride. Becca Martin Brown will have that story. And don't forget, we have the best sports coverage as well. Whether your interest is high school, college, or pro sports, the Razorback men's basketball team continues its pursuit of an SEC tournament title this weekend, and we've got high school basketball championships playing out this weekend, including Springdale High School boys playing for the 6A state championship against Jonesboro Friday. All of this and more is available to our subscribers on our tablet and cell phone apps and at our websites, nwaonline.com and rivervalleygazette.com. To those of you who already are subscribers, thank you for your support of local journalism. If you're not a subscriber, please note we've got a special offer for our podcast listeners. Just visit nwaonline.com/podcast23 to get started. Or you can call us at 479-684-5509. Please check back with us next Friday for a new edition of the Know the News podcast. Thanks for listening. Again, I'm Dave Porozik, your podcast host this week. Have a great weekend, and until next Friday, so long.